Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
And good morning. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Point Taken Show. She's Kristen. I'm Steve. A headline in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel making big headlines across the country, getting a lot of attention. Here's the headline directly read from the story by Hope Carnop, Journal Sentinel reporter. Hong appears on stream with Hassan Piker, who has said U.S. deserved 9/11. Your take on what that means for her campaign?
Well, she raised a lot of money out of it. And
ultimately, I think that's why she did it.
Probably definitely why she did it. I mean, I think between that and I guess there was a different... I had never heard of this other person who's... what was it? There was another person, Mike from PA, who's been banned from Twitch several times. So in a combination of $35,000 from that, I think $57,000 she raised by going on Hassan Piker's stream. Obviously, that's over $85,000. And so I think
one day, which is a healthy
for her campaign, it's a big deal, especially since the deadline was yesterday as far as what we're going to see for reports by July 15th. And, you know, in the sense that, I mean, this is not the first time that this is Piker has been in the crosshairs of the ongoing dispute, let's say, between a moderate wing and a leftist wing of the Democratic Party, right? This happened in Michigan for different candidates that have campaigned with Hassan Piker. He is a, I don't know if you want to say he is a similar character as Charlie Kirk for the left.
He's extreme.
As far as things, he streams like 6 hours a day. He's been in the public eye for, I mean, I remember first hearing about Hassan Piker when he was still with the Young Turks. So that was 2015, 16, 17. So he's been, there's a lot of tape, as they say, for this guy's things that he has said over the years. And so he also has an audience of like 3 million people. And especially the people who I think subscribe to Hassan and the overlap with people who are fervent about Hong and her policies overlap a lot. So on the one side, I mean, it's hard for me to criticize this too much when we just were saying yesterday and giving flowers to J.D. Vance for going on Bill Maher, who's also said some controversial things over the years, that like you either agree that people should be having conversations with everyone, even when you don't agree with the people that you're talking to, and that appearing on someone's show doesn't co-sign everything that they say, or you don't, right? And I think I stand on the side that that's what this show is about. We try to have conversations with lots of different people, people we don't always agree with, and that further understanding only happens through conversation, and the conversation doesn't mean that you agree on everything. So I think it's either you either believe in that or you don't, that you can't pick and choose it, because who is the arbiter then of who's too extreme to have a conversation with and who's not?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that point, because we made that very point on the show. I think where people will question it is, people now have ballots in hand. Early voting has started. I just got mine in the mail. Is this a smart decision by a candidate who many times has been called the front runner for Democrats? And smart people like Joseph Becky said that's probably not true, but I guess we're going to find out for real in a few months. Not even a few months, 1 month. It is something that you can look at from 40,000 feet and say, is that a smart move by a candidate in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, I'm not sure caution has been a bedrock of Fran Hong's campaign, right?
No.
Like, this is someone who I think
what she does.
Is unapologetic in what her stances are, talks in a very different way than I think you're used to typical politicians talking, and that has resonated with a lot of people. Is it enough people? We'll find out August 11th, right? And I think that is part of the game. Like, I don't think she's a bad person for going on his show. And, you know, I think there's an opportunity, like we saw it yesterday as far as the opportunity for other candidates who now specifically made statements about how they would never go on his show as an opportunity to appeal to someone else.
Other candidates being who?
David Crowley made an, I think David Crowley, Kelda said, I think Kelda said something. I think Kelda specifically categorized it as like a money grab versus specifically saying that Hassan Piker was too extreme. David Crowley, Kelda, I think maybe Joel Brennan. I think Joel Brennan said something about this shouldn't be about clicks. This should be about Wisconsin. So it's also, you know, it's been an opportunity for people to say, this is why I'm different than her.
All right. You're closer to her than I am.
Francesca Hong?
Yes. Is this helpful to her?
Certainly helpful with money.
Yeah. And that's
right?
Ultimately,
I mean,
that's why
I
think she did.
A significant amount of money to raise in one day.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, I think ultimately this widens her appeal to, how do I want to praise this? It has raised her name recognition amongst people who are already in the camp of people who are excited about the ideas that leftist DSA candidates are talking about. The question is, does it raise her profile, and did it do anything to move the needle with Wisconsin voters who are going to vote on August 11th? And that I don't know. I already know. I think it's everyone who was already going to vote for her. This didn't change their mind. It only made them double down harder. I think people who were already not going to vote for her, this didn't change their mind. And what is the amount of voters who hear this story that she went on this show that it changes their mind one way or another? That is an unknown that I don't think is probably that many people ultimately.
Joseph Pecky made a great point last week to us in the group. Jake Curtis was filling in for Bill McCosh about some people's perception of the power of DSA, Democratic Socialists, and what the actual voting power, i.e. people going to the ballot box and voting for these candidates. Now, we've seen, obviously, New York State's an example, New York City. There's a Colorado example yesterday where there's some surprises happening. But I wonder, if there is truly this groundswell of support for DSA candidates in Wisconsin. We've seen, obviously, in Milwaukee.
I think there's more than people think there is. I think there's, as I'm hearing from
people.
Give
me a level of popularity, if you know. Just guess.
I mean, look at all the straw polls. I mean, this between straw polls and polling,
okay,
where she's ending up is higher than when she first launched her campaign, I think people thought she would be. And I think it is because when you're talking about power structures, you're talking about working class issues. Like, I think you take away the socialist branding that they have decided to coalesce under, and you simply look at issues. I think a lot of the issues that she is talking about are popular. Like, I think this is a different side of the same coin as far as, like, right-wing MAGA populism. I mean, ultimately, Bernie Sanders won in 2016, right? And then I think there was people who were angry about him not winning the actual candidacy, and then they swung their vote for Trump. Like, Bernie and Trump won in 2016 in Wisconsin, right? There is a working-class populist faction of voters who care about working-class issues that I think the socialist thing does more harm than good versus
horrible branding.
Yeah, versus what the actual policies are as far as wanting people to have better health care, wanting people to have better schools, people wanting to have people have a living wage. Like, there's a lot of things that outside of the titles, it's hard to argue that people shouldn't want those things.
Think about this during the break. Is this the future of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin?
Ooh.
That brand. Think about it during the break. She's Kristen. I'm Steve. Point taken. Text here from the 608. Jake says Fran's trying to do her campaign in her own way, as she has with success. I don't think it's a good idea in a statewide election, but that's how Fran rolls. And it worked for her so far. If Dem voters think Fran is too far out there and lacks judgment by going on this show, then gather around one candidate and have the others drop out. She is the beneficiary of this big group so that a smaller number, smaller margin can win. She's benefited from that. We're going to find out next month how popular she is, certainly, and how popular this movement, which you can't ignore. If you talk about politics, observe politics.
There's another win last night in Colorado.
Absolutely. This is something that is energizing some people. And here's what feeds into that. This is another way we can look at this. There are a lot of angry voters out there for a lot of different reasons.
A lot of angry people.
Yeah. Cost of living, you know, social media anger. Hell, I did a whole podcast on it with the anger professor a few months ago. But I guess for me, the question is, and again, it will be answered because she's the candidate that's been talked about so much in Wisconsin, Francesca Hong. Will this signal this becoming sort of the brand of Wisconsin Democrats? Because we've had some local electeds here on the council and in other circumstances who represent Democratic Socialism, or at least have that same mindset. And now we see the rise of Francesca Hong throughout all this polling. Now, I haven't seen any sort of internal polling that suggests otherwise, but I know I referred to Joe a few times this morning. He doesn't see it as a significant enough base to win that primary. What is this the future of this party?
Like the title?
The title sucks, to be honest, but just those ideas.
I think there's core tenets to what they say they are fighting for that should be part of the Democratic Party. Right? I think that when you talk about the last 10 years of like what is the Democratic Party been except not Trump and anti-Trump and, you know, a lot of talk around, you know, this is a major fissure when people go back and analyze Kamala Harris's campaign is when she stopped talking about the economy and she started talking about democracy, right? As far as like all of these things, as far as we're trying to uphold our democracy and how little that actually resonated with a lot of voters versus had she just kept talking about economic issues. And so I think in general, at least where I stand, as far as continuing to beat the drum of being a party that's trying to make life easier for people is a winning strategy. I think that also there's a part of this that is like, I don't know, how do I put this? There are bigger players at hand inside of that have a lot to lose if some of these grassroots campaigns do well, right? Like there is an entire class of political consultants who make a lot of money by this, like having the status quo stay the same. And they are not very excited about the idea of being out of a job. And I'm talking about Democratic political consultants as much as I'm talking about Republican ones, right? And so their status, their opportunity to have smear campaigns and their incentive to crush things that would put them out of a job and have the media paint things in a certain way, like that's a secret veiled source that the average person doesn't actually understand how like the levers are moved that I think is also part of this.
Extra says, according to a recent Marquette poll, she's the only one that can't beat Tiffany. Again, let's let the voters decide this. We can all speculate on what we think is going to happen. I have no idea what the Democrats are going to do, what their Democratic voters in Wisconsin are going to do. I just wonder, it's an interesting reality because while we see the popularity of Democratic Socialist candidates in New York and certain local places, Colorado yesterday, I don't see any time in our near future that you're going to see a U.S. senator being a Democratic Socialist. Could be wrong. Or a governor.
I mean, that is the thing as far as we, and I think that was the clip that we put out last week when we talked about this with Jake and Joe, which is it's one thing for some of these candidates to be winning in city council races, in congressional races that was a very blue district. Statewide office is a totally different thing. Purple districts is a totally different thing. And so I think that how this grows and how the organizing around it manifests is a story that will continue past these midterm elections.
Does it endanger the idea that Democrats have a huge opportunity in the midterms? And by not going to the middle, but going to the far left in some cases, that you lose a significant opportunity for one party, not the Republicans who currently control everything, but Democrats that sort of take back that power. Does it endanger that sort of mission statement? I think it does.
Well, but you lose it on the other side too. Like in, you know, I because I spent a fair amount of time online, like I see the comments from people who are incredibly, is like it, where it feels like it's Fran or nothing. Right. And so if August comes and Francesca does not win the primary, who of her supporters stays home entirely in November, that is also a risk in the same way that if she won, what moderates either don't vote or vote for Tiffany. I don't know what those numbers are.
No.
And that might be a Charles Franklin question.
No, I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah, like I don't really know like what is the actual numbers. And that's also people who are going to vote versus people who just hold those beliefs and may or may not vote regularly.
Interesting comment from the 262. In the summer fall of 2016, no one thought Trump would win. And that's true because I listened to conservative radio. They all thought Clinton would win. But here we are.
And here we are.
So, I mean, this election is fascinating for a lot of different reasons, including the DSA piece of this. I will say this about Francesca Hung. I've interviewed her, I think, two times now. I've met her away from the show a couple of times. She seems like a nice person. I think she sort of pushes the envelope of what most people in our state or our area think of as an elected official. She is not afraid to drop the F-bomb on occasion, or certainly utilizing social media in a way that rubs some people the wrong way. I've seen her crucified on social media for some of the language she uses and stuff. Doesn't mean I'm not usually irritated by people using the F-word, because I use it, not in the air. But it's just what she is. And maybe that unique brand, sort of play the other side, maybe her brand is so unique that that actually inspires some Democratic voters to vote for that reason. Because she is, to use a very old political term, a muckraker. She's not interested in the
status quo. But she also comes off as authentic.
Yeah. And maybe that's, again, being an old white guy, maybe that's the new reality for voters. Maybe they're looking for more authenticity and more reality, however you interpret that, in the people that they elect for office. We'll find out. It's not going to be that far away. And certainly ballots are in hand already. Lots more to talk about. We'll do that after this on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. A little bit of time before we get to the bottom of the hour news with Connie Weber. Ultimately, we're going to decide who's going to be the candidates for governor. Tom Tiffany, obviously, is going to be the one. I'm open-minded enough to understand that politics is changing. Candidates are changing. Elections are changing. People, we were talking during the break about, the extremism of Trump on the other side. And people like Charlie Kirk and others who said some crazy things. And yet, if you criticize that, then you were the bad person for the words that they chose to use. And same thing from Fran Hong. She can go on the show she wants to go on. It's her right. She can speak freely on any issue. I think she has to ultimately reconcile that with what voters in Wisconsin want. Do they want that? I'm a person, this is not surprising to you, that thinks moderates are the key. Independent voters are the key. I don't know if you can answer if she speaks to them.
I think people are desperate for things to be different, and that they
some people.
I think there is a not non-insignificant amount of people, insignificant amount of people who feel like things are not working, and moderates will not get it done, and so they cling to the platforms of something that feels like if it could happen, if it could get done, would create real change. And the big part is, just because you get elected doesn't mean those things are going to happen.
Yeah, you're one person. Ask Tony Evers about that. All right, tax relief bill. We often talk. Welcome to Point Taken, Kristen and Steve on this Wednesday edition. Had a lot of fun at the WTMJ Classic golf outing yesterday at Morningstar Golf.
I heard you golfed well.
I did play pretty well. Yeah, it was fun. It was super hot, though. I gave it about 7 holes, and I was exhausted. And then, of course, I told you I came home and our power was out. Like, the worst day of the year to have the power out. Thankfully, the hardworking folks that, fixed that stuff got it done in 3 hours, and I think our house is finally
cooled
back. What
did you do for those 3 hours? Do you just stick it out the house, or did you go
I went in the basement. I did.
Was
I went
it cool in the basement?
Yeah, our basement
cool enough?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And then I went, interesting way to cool down. I was spraying my backyard, and the water's nice and cold, so you get that. So that how
you didn't run through the sprinklers. You didn't set up the sprinkler and start doing some cartwheels through it.
Little kids, yeah, trying not to get too wet. Yeah, so I did all of that, but so that was my day yesterday, and I think I'm finally back. Although you might disagree at my normal core temperature. So this story fascinates me, and I wanted to put it on the show today because a lot of what this president does, Donald Trump, is unconventional. Communication-wise, policy-wise, tariff-wise, how he treats other foreign leaders and things he says, obviously. But he also has, and I'm not necessarily saying it's I think it's sort of a bad thing, but I mean, I don't know how much of this is legal versus not legal, because I'm not an expert on what a president can and can't do financially while they're in office. There are certain rules, the Hatch Act is one of them, I believe, and some other things that apply. But he just filed his disclosure for the last year. If what you can read is true, he's increased his wealth by $2 billion in like the year plus.
That's a lot of money. He can afford gas.
He can. That's why he doesn't care about inflation. So it's the disclosure report for 2025, last year. First year of his second non-consecutive term in the White House. The thing's 927 pages long. You know how long J.D. Vance's is? 17.
Pages?
Yeah.
So wait, say those numbers again.
Trump's disclosure was 927 pages long.
For 1 year?
1 year, one person. Vance's, same year, one person, 17 pages. Now, so this is some of the stuff that I'm not sure. So he made $515 million from these tokens that he sells through his World Liberty Financial and their holding company. And it's like this, what do you call it? Stable coin. Obviously, that digital currency. He made $515 million from that. $635 million in royalties. What are called, and I'm not even sure what these are. Neither were the reporters. Celebration coins. I think they're pictures of his image that people buy for like $50 to $100. Did I tell you someone bought me one of those ones? I still have it, actually. Maybe it'll be worth some money at some point. Right. Wink, wink, nod, nod. So he made $635 million in royalties just from these celebration coins. And again, journalists saying, journalist organizations, not clear what these things actually are. No surprise, his golf and golf club properties took in $290 million in income related to revenue from Mar-a-Lago, Trump National, Doral, Bedminster, New Jersey, Jupiter Golf Club, and of course, Trump National, Washington, D.C. Here's the other part. This part seems illegal to me, but I'm not an expert. It also shows that he or his financial advisors made some significant stock purchases. Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA, between $5 million and $25 million each. The trades were among the largest individual stock transactions in this disclosure. Correct me if I'm wrong, if you know. And if there's a financial expert out there who has more expertise than us, weigh in, 855-616-1620. Isn't a president supposed to pretty much put their financial assets and resources on hold during their administration to avoid conflict of interest?
That's my understanding.
No, I get the golf thing. He likes to golf, and he's going to show up at golf courses. All presidents do that. Everybody. Obama did it. Clinton did it. They all love to golf. It is fascinating to me, though, that he's enriched themselves that way, not just him, his family as well, his sons. His son-in-law and his daughter. Why this is suspicious? Because some of these purchases, these stock purchases, were made directly before major decisions announced by the administration. The NVIDIA one is one of them, where the government purchased 15% of this chip sale to China, which is another thing that they've done in this administration. They've sort of crossed that barrier into individual companies' holdings and become a partner with. You don't see that often from a president solely being an investor in a company. He's done a lot of that stuff. I'm just curious, because a lot of people worship wealth in this country. 855-616-1620. People think this is a good idea. Is it just that's what he does? He's a businessman, so keep making money. What do you think?
I mean, I think you probably know what I think as far as just the opportunity to leverage the position. Just making an obscene amount of money in a short period of time doesn't feel like the highest integrity of the highest office in the land. And I think had any other previous president done this, people would be up in arms. And it feels like just another thing of like whenever he says something that's wildly offensive on Truth Social, like when he did the monkey tweet right. with the Obama's faces on it, it was like, you know, there's outrage and then there's the exhaustion of outrage because you're like, well, this is just what he does. And I think on top of the outrageous things that he puts on social media, him finding ways to make money while in office is also like, well, that's just what he's going to do. So you're like, there's just like a shrug that happens because what else are you going to actually do except accept it.
It's just how he does it. Just to round out the report, he made more than $86 million in settlements of legal disputes from media companies, which is significant because they're reporting supposedly on him. ABC, CBS, Meta, YouTube, and X. He also bought between $500,000 and $1 million in gold bars. Interesting. And received in gifts a number of tickets, sporting events, other things, totaling $370,000. And again, I could be wrong, but I remember talking to Vice President Joe Biden about gifts, and he said there's a lot of weirdness to this. Most of the stuff at the time, this is 10 years ago, we give back to the country or we donate. Well, if you go to a sporting event, you're not donating. You're using the tickets. I guess presidents are always invited, right? But all the other gifts, where are those? Maybe they're in the Oval Office. Maybe that's where some of that gold came from. Interesting story about the president. Lots more to talk to on Point Taken on this Wednesday edition. Thanks for joining us. If you miss any or all of our show, you can always find us on the podcast page at WTMJ.com. She's Kristen. I'm Steve. It's Point Taken on a Wednesday. Thanks for listening. America 250, obviously, we're all talking about it. We're all going to be celebrating the 4th of July this Saturday, an off day for all of us, of course. And
is it going to rain? Is that what I heard?
It sounds like the weekend could be a little questionable, but not an all-day rain, like a hit or miss, you know, which is, it's kind of normal for the summer. And I guess we were going back and forth all last week and early this week about what topics to sort of frame around the 250. I'm really focused on the flag. We've had a flag flying on our front, off the house, my brick house, the flagpole, since Memorial Day. I just like the way it looks. It feels summery to me. For example, a little inside baseball, I have an American flag flying in the front yard and backyard is a Summerfest flag, the actual logo of Summerfest. Because that speaks to summer to me.
I agree. You're supposed to bring me a flag.
I would have, but I couldn't see it in my closet because I had no power yet.
Fair enough.
So it's sitting in there somewhere. I'll grab that.
Although
box.
I do think we need, as I was looking at the house, I was like, because we've never flown a flag, any flag.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that Mike has, I think he has the Milwaukee, he has the People's Flag.
I love the People's Flag.
He has this stupid Live a Great Story, like lifestyle brand that was on when he went to Croatia for a yacht week. Also the tattoo he got post so he has Live a Great Story.
Wow.
So he has that flag in our garage. I think we might have an American flag, but I feel like the one you're going to give us is better.
It's sketched, it's beautiful.
I don't think we have, we need to bolt in
the
flag holder in our house.
You buy the metal.
As I'm thinking of the house, I don't think we have an actual place right
it's
now.
It's simple. You buy the metal one and then you can either put it straight out or at an angle. It goes off any wood you can, or brick you can screw it into. And then you can remove it easily when you should. And if you shouldn't just keep them out there and let them get all weathered. They're supposed to be lit at night if you have it outside.
So that's a good question. So I remember this back when Colin Kaepernick, remember that story?
Yeah, spent a lot of time on the radio talking about
of
that.
That's probably right around when you first started on the radio. Wasn't that 2017, like fall of 2017 when he first came back and started doing that? So I remember during that time, a lot of conversation around the rules about the flag, right? Like what, not the flag protocol, what is the actual doctrine that says like what you can and cannot do when it comes to the flag as far as
the official?
Yeah, it's like all the rules around like how you're supposed to fly it, how it's never supposed to touch the ground. But then there was also people referencing all of these kind of more obscure rules. It's kind of like when people start quoting the Bible and then someone has like an actual Bible scholar is like, well, it also says this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are certain things about flag rules of like not wearing the flag. And
everybody wears
Everybody breaks that one.
Yeah. And I'm not a fan of that, by the way.
And even, so there's all these other rules about the flag that we break all the time. And so again, it's like, which ones do we adhere to? Which ones do we not? Because I was at my uncle's house on Saturday. And they have an unbelievably fun backyard of just like a lot of land. They have a basketball court. They have a pool. Like just, it's like a place to hang out. And on one of the basketball hoops, they have an American flag flying on the backboard.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to be throwing basketballs at the American flag.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're breaking some rules right now.
We stretch that. It's called the flag code.
Flag code. Thank you. I couldn't think of that word.
You're supposed to light it. If you leave it out at night, you're supposed to light it. Ours is lit at night by the house lights. But it's, I'm just curious, 855-616-1620, if you are going to fly the flag, but if you're not flying the flag deliberately, like not, is that like
you have one and you're not flying it.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. Like, give me like a couple sentences on why you're doing it. Is it a protest? Is it, because I can tell you, and this, I'm not proud of this. My next door neighbor is a Marine. He's got the flag pole lit at night. He's got the U.S. flag top, Marine flag flying below that. Proud veteran, love that. We have our flag up most of the year. A few other neighbors have flagpoles, but I would say it's maybe 35%, a third, fly flags ever. Are you flying a flag this weekend? Will you put some, you know, the little flags you get at parades? Mm-hmm. Some people put those out. I'd put a few of those out, stick them in my planners. Are you going to fly the flag? And if you're not, I'm curious, is it a protest against a specific thing? I know some people have told me it's a protest against this president. I think this day is not about the president. It's about this country. And obviously the two things are closely related. But the significance of the flag is important because we celebrate not only the great history of our country, but the freedoms that men and women have died for going all the way back to allow us. And I think that's the significance of the flying a flag for me. What do you think? 855-616-1620. It is Point Taken on a Wednesday on 620 WTMJ. Couple quick texts on our flag conversation. Normally I would fly the flag from the 414 Carol. The best I can do this year is put a bull on my front door with a flag design. It's a shame. I feel like we lost the opportunity to celebrate the 250th. After all that's been going on in 414, I fly my flag in honor of my WW2 father. Ooh, it just shifted on me. But I always have my sign, dictator or democracy sign, next to it. I won't let MAGA steal a flag from my father fought for and I continue to fight for. You have some flag stuff?
So I quickly looked at... Oh, God, did I miss it? I had it up as far as common flag violations, because I was referencing that before as far as the flag code. And I think the first one is, like I said before, as far as it is actually a no-no to wear the flag.
Yeah. I feel like everyone does it now.
And so, I mean, think about how many things are sold as far as, like, even... Our friend Jay Curtis came here with the Brewers hat that had the flag on it. But yeah, wearing a flag, the flag should never be used as apparel, bedding, or drapery. Using flag pattern clothing or costumes technically violates the code. Patches are permitted, apparently. Improper display, flag should be flown in the dark unless properly, should not be flown in the dark unless properly illuminated. We already talked about that one. Disposable and advertising use. The flag should not be printed on items meant to be discarded, such as paper napkins, boxes, or plates.
That's also very
using
popular.
Using it as advertising or printing a company name directly onto the flag is also prohibited. Obviously, I think we all know you're not supposed to let it touch the ground. Damaged condition, carrying it horizontally. So yeah, but those the apparel one and the like tchotchke stuff, I think, is ones that are a lot of us are guilty of.
Yeah. And I'm not a huge fan. I probably have a shirt that has a little flag emblem on it, but I've seen the shirts where it's the whole shirt. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that, but I'm not the decider. Lots of commentary. I wish we had time, but this one, some of these just make me proud. Fly the flag every day. My three sons all served in uniform. The flag is about the United States. In the weekend, we should show unity and gratitude for all this country offers. And technology, there's now solar-powered flagpoles that actually light up at night so you can keep
up. So you can keep it up.
Perfectly.
Of course. I'm sure it's sold on Amazon.
Yeah, everything's sold on Amazon. I can attest to that, given our delivery schedule at the house. I always joke with my wife that the driver says hi if I see the driver. He always asks how she's doing, and she doesn't like when I do that. So we get a lot of packages. All right, break for news.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
All right. We talk a lot about AI. We were talking about AI yesterday with Brian Reisinger and him.
AI and farming. And
yeah, I'll put his op-eds in the newsletter for this weekend.
A word on Brian. Brilliant. His book,
smart guy.
I read his book twice, actually, about a year apart. I'm falling into that pattern where I reread books because I like them and I want to remember something specific about it. But he's written two pieces at the Journal Sentinel on that the AI influence and what the risks are and what could happen.
Well, I think what was also interesting about, because as he mentioned, a lot of this we talk about the white collar workers and marketing and copywriting and stuff that is more computer based. And I don't think you assume until like the robotics come that some of the hands-on farming, working in like machinery, some of the things like trades, that seems less likely to succumb to AI stuff. Obviously, he's thought about this a lot more than we have as far as how it affects that sector, but that there is also a problem there. Not so much as it replaces the work, but who can leverage the technology and who can't. And who like gets pushed out of business because they are not big enough to continue to compete and buy these things. That is not what we're talking about today. We're talking about the inverse of that, of maybe an over getting a little cart ahead of the horse when it comes to firing and then having to rehire people because AI isn't quite there yet. So Ford, I saw this earlier this week, Ford has rehired human engineers after the AI they implemented fell short. So obviously, when we think of Ford, it is the company that revolutionized manufacturing with assembly lines. And so after they had an AI quality control systems that they invested in this and it wasn't good enough. And I think that is the case, right? Like, I don't know. We'll come back to it in a second. But think about like how you use ChatGPT or the different AI tools and like where it's fallen short for you. So they invested in this. It didn't actually do what they needed it to do. So then they rehired 350 what they call graybeard engineers, also known as experienced human workers, to both train younger staff and train the AI tools. And so Ford CEO said that the new and improved human system is cutting down costs like warranty coverage and recalls, helping it save hundreds of millions of dollars. And so I do think like when you put the work into AI, as far as like, you know, and I'll be totally honest, I've used ChatGPT for coming up with like newsletter subject lines or like check this for grammar or stuff like that. But there is still this point, that's just chatbots, let alone all the other things that AI can do, of just because it did it fast doesn't mean it did it as well as humans still can. And it'll be interesting to see how many different industries this affects. Of like, we laid off all these people, and then there's all these mistakes that are happening because there's not enough people to cross-reference and double-check that the AI's work was good and accurate.
Don't you think this is really... I'm reading some of the stuff that I cut and pasted from a story I read this morning. It's, to me, this is the essence of what the positive could be. Enhancing, not replacing.
Yeah.
That the blend is what matters, because you... Obviously, the human experience, obviously, the resume that people have in their specialized field, engineering is a very specific field. But why would you discard that in the hope that AI, just by picking and choosing where it searches on the internet for information, is going to be smarter, better, faster, more efficient? I think that's a mistake.
But I will say, so my mom is getting knee surgery in October. Yeah.
Oh.
And, you know, with that, it's not only caretaking for her, but it's also like certain other people in her life that she is the caretaker for. And when she's laid out,
I feel like your mom's caretaker for everybody.
She is. But you know, when she actually like, cause the big problem with my mother is this is a woman who's not very good at sitting still. And so post knee replacement, you got to sit still. And so I was like, listen, you can take it or leave it as you will, but at least put it into ChatGPT, kind of the situation of her situation and like the different asking it to find different resources for agencies that have like, you know, like different nurses or day workers who could come in to like help cook because they don't live close, right? Like it's stuff that I would do if they live next door. But since I have a job that I can't work remotely, like trying to find access to people who could help. And I will say ChatGPT was very helpful in like unearthing things that exist that would have taken like a lot more research for longer. So there are uses and really good uses of it, but also I didn't have the time to go check, like, is this accurate? like it gave me a really nice copy and paste
thing. It may not be accurate.
And then like, it still takes the work for her to like call the numbers or the agencies that it like explains like what's out there of once you actually pick up the phone, like, does this lead to a real person? And so that is the thing. It's like, it looks really good when you type it in, and the unknown of what the quality is once you actually apply it.
I think just as we're employees learning how to utilize AI, and I'll be honest, I use it for reframing arguments and or stories in a sense that makes sense for radio. I do that at least 3 times a week. Also do it for a little bit of gathering information. That's how I utilize it. But it is interesting to me that companies who are AI forward thinkers are actually, the trend is they're hiring more people, not less.
Well, and that was the next point I was going to make. So like AI itself, not cheap. I mean, I think in individual subscriptions, like $20 a month.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on what your threshold is, not super expensive. But the investment on a company level, if you're then getting to the point that you're investing in AI and it's not actually saving you headcount, is this creating the efficiencies? Like, where is the money being saved that is worth the investment? And I'm not saying I want people to lose their jobs. I think there is also a whole other argument as far as how we ensure that we don't have like a unemployment rate of double digits right. because AI has just replaced everything. But I also understand from the standpoint of like, if you're making these massive investments, where are you actually saving money if you still need the same headcount to make sure that the investment in AI and the quality control is there?
Yeah, it's not going away. And we're going to do another story after the break about some of the things that are happening in the world of AI and how it impacts the economy and the commerce and all that stuff. I think if you're just someone that just pushes back because it's new and different, let's be honest, there's people who don't like change. I don't care what industry you work in, where you work, you know, where you live. Doesn't matter. There's some people that they don't want change. And this is like the worst argument you can ever make to me. This is the way we always did it. I hate that argument. I will rebuff it every time I hear it. That's stupid.
You're a conservative.
Yes.
Isn't that like the typical mindset of a conservative?
Conservatives.
Don't break.
Lazy conservative.
No, what? Don't fix what doesn't need
Don't fix it if it ain't broke. Yeah, But that's, I've had some really smart people say that to me. I go, there's always a better way. We just haven't either thought about it yet or we haven't implemented it yet. And trust me, that's true. Like, I was going to tell a story, but I just realized I probably shouldn't tell that story. So I self-edited myself. I didn't even use ChatGPT for that. All right, we're late for break. Lots more AI come up in the next segment after this. We're talking AI. It's an interesting conversation because obviously we're all being impacted by it. And even people who you don't think are being impacted by it. For example, I was talking to the We Energies helpline or whatever they call it.
Because you were trying to get your power back on yesterday?
And look, I will compliment the folks who fixed our problem in our neighborhood. It was only our neighborhood. I think there was 20 homes.
Well, what caused it?
According to their website, equipment malfunction.
Was it the heat?
I don't know. Who knows? I would have liked a little more. Actually, I'm going to have a conversation with one of the representatives later today about a little more information would be helpful. But one of the things that I noticed, this is like the bad side of things. So they have a like this helpline you call. It's an 800 number. And then it's like an AI generated. You say things and it like moves you around. And I don't know how many times we said our address. And both of us are fairly well spoken. I said my address like 10 times. Slowly, fast, you know, deliberate. It just couldn't get it. And I've been a customer in my house since 1993. I gave him my phone number. Clearly my phone number. It just couldn't find us in their system. Now, it's an AI-generated system, because it's certainly an AI voice. Very nice sounding voice. But it was completely not helpful. And at the end of it, we just go, representative! Like as loud
just punching zero as many times as possible.
So We Energies love the frontline people who are working on the, you know, the streets and the trees and the poles and all that stuff. But my God, that's problematic. Anyway.
All right. On a different side. So yesterday when we were talking to Brian, like, I think there is agreement that as these things are advancing, whether it's politicians, like the coalitions between lawmakers, the people who are making this technology, and other stakeholders as far as the responsibility and good faith of making things that are not just going to exploit more and more wealth and power for the few, but actually making things that can help the most amount of people. And as Brian was saying that yesterday, it's like, you know, like these Silicon Valley people should come to rural parts of this, like Wisconsin and stuff. I was like, well, in my mind, I was thinking, what incentive do they have to actually do that? But then, as of this morning, on Axios, there was an exclusive that they had that there's a new UN-backed commission that's going to bring top tech executives and heads of state to the same table to forge global solutions for AI, which I think is a good thing. Sometimes I also hear commission, and I'm like, is this just like a vanity project that sounds good? Is like there any teeth actually to this? But it's like Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff. There's different African presidents. I guess Rwandan president Paul Kagame.
Don't know.
Tell me if I'm wrong for pronouncing that. they're co-chairing this, which is, you know, Mark Benioff, real deal. But it's like, is this what it takes? Because it just does feel like we are, but it's just like we were behind the ball with for social media. I also don't know if our lawmakers are the most... They need to be doing something. Are they the best people to be doing it? Because they do they have the most information? Like, a la when... Who was the guy who was like, what is... Are you... Do you promise... Was it... Do you promise to dismantle Finsta?
Yeah.
To and it's like that is not a real thing. That is a term. So I don't know. Like, is this the way? Is it like through these commissions with both, you know, politicians and heads of these companies? Like, what is the actual mechanism of getting the share, like the stakeholders at the same table that actually can create policy and direction that make sure that this is more good than bad for the most amount of people? And I don't know. The commission always just like kind of comes with a term of like, yeah, or the thoughts of like it's another study.
Yeah.
We studied it.
Yeah. And like, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
I like the fact they're calling attention to it. That's a good thing. That's kind of what the UN is there to do. But again, I'll go back to the same point I made. When you have one individual like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Sam Altman, go down the line, mostly men, mostly one man making all the decisions essentially for their companies. And these are some of the largest companies in the world now. And Elon Musk is the richest person in the world. Apparently he went below a trillion. So he's not a trillionaire anymore. That makes me feel better. But it is mind boggling.
That's because he made his lair.
Yeah. Right.
His volcanic lair. Yeah. Where he just spent too much money on this and he's not a trillionaire anymore.
And I had this argument as recently as last week. I know there's some people that walk around and think because you've made money, you're a genius or brilliant or smarter than everybody. That's not necessarily true. Circumstances, luck, obviously some IQ.
Riding the corporate ladder. How many C-suite people have you met? You're like, you're not that smart.
No, I just had that conversation.
Why do you make $600,000 a year?
Why do you make that? Because you're not smart. You fell into the position, and that drives me nuts. So
failed up.
So I'm less confident about this because I understand it's still super rich, older, general middle-aged to older white men control everything. And since I know enough about history to know that formula, while it made some people very successful, often didn't trickle down, to use an old term, economic term, to the individuals who lived under those regimes, those reigns, or those countries' leaders. That's my fear. So I applaud the UN for at least doing something. But if it's just a study or a commission, it's just weird. I have hope for AI, but I'm cautiously concerned as well. And I think that's where where everyone should be on it, because there's risks. And concentrating power generally doesn't work well in almost any context. One person, that much power. Texter says, Aaron from Greendale, the rich are rewarded for their risk-taking. Yeah, sure. They often get help.
They're also insulated sometimes from their risk-taking.
They often get governmental help that we don't talk about enough.
I mean, that's the thing with Elon Musk. Elon Musk has made his money off of the backs of taxpayers as far as like the subsidies and like government contracts he's gotten. It's not like he just created this wealth out of nowhere. Like, he created his wealth because of Americans.
He was smart enough to play the system, and he won. And now he's in the back pocket, or he's in the sphere of influence of the President of the United States. Quick break. Thanks for all the texts. Lots of texters today. We can't possibly read them all, but I do try to read them during the break. And it never fails. There's always the Elon Musk defenders. And look, I'm not going to deny the guy's made a ton of money. He's obviously very smart. I have higher expectations for people that are going to be called the richest man in the world or richest person in the world. And he says and does some really stupid, crazy things. And I think it's possible to be both a genius and an idiot at the same time. And in my world, he qualifies. And don't make it political. I'm not saying it because he's aligned with Trump. I don't care about that. I just don't like some of the things he does. And that's the nature of why I would say that. And the luck thing is just dumb. I didn't say it's all about luck, but luck certainly plays into it. Right place, right time. There's a lot of people that did brilliant things, and they deserve the recognition and, in some ways, the money they receive because of their genius. And there's plenty of examples of both men and women who have done that. So leave that alone. All right, after the break, I didn't know this was as big a problem as I probably should have, but there's areas of Milwaukee that are underserved for air conditioning.
All right, are you sitting in air conditioning right now?
Yes.
Yes. I would say these are those days when you feel a big difference of being outside and then being able to step into air conditioning. But not everyone gets to have that. And so there was data published by the U.S. Census Bureau in May that showed an estimated 10% of occupied households in Milwaukee County do not have air conditioning. There's certain parts of the county that you can probably imagine where have higher rates of no air conditioning than other parts. And it's interesting because it's certainly something you take for granted, right?
Yeah.
And on days like this, I mean, this is what I think when we talked about last week with the heat wave that was in Europe, which is a lot older than here. There's so many places. There's a lot more places that don't necessarily have air conditioning,
including their hotels,
which is why you see the death rate that was 1,000 more people that died last week. And so it is really scary when you're in a position where you're like, I don't have access to get into a cool place. And it's interesting because I know this week, there was obviously the fire that happened at the elementary school.
Right.
And I know Chief Lipsky was on, I think, with the afternoon news yesterday talking about it as far as sprinkler systems, which is a drum that he's been beating. And it's interesting. I don't know what the regulations are, because we know that when new buildings get built, they have to have a sprinkler system. But with updates to buildings or whatever, like, what is the regulations around needing to have air conditioning? And as things get hotter and hotter, does that become a requirement because people need access to cool off?
Climate change. Yeah. What shocked me was 10% apparently don't have access to air conditioning. But what really caught me now, because I lived in Cudahy growing up. My parents live in Cudahy. My brother lives in Cudahy. I have relatives in Cudahy. I have friends in Cudahy. South Milwaukee and Cudahy have the highest percentage of homes without AC. Huh. I would never have guessed that. They're older homes. They're tracts of housing. They all look the same. They're often duplexes or very small, tiny homes. But to have that on the south side of Milwaukee, I just couldn't believe it. Now, I wasn't oblivious to it because I always hear when I watch local, when I do, about cooling centers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in this heat and you don't have AC, I would highly recommend you find a way to get out of this. Because just in the time that our AC was off yesterday from late afternoon to 8 or whatever it was, I mean, the home warmed up like 6 degrees. It was getting sticky and uncomfortable, but it wasn't 100. I have been in homes like this many years ago. Unheated homes in a heat wave can be 100 degrees inside there if the windows aren't open. And think about the elderly.
Yeah.
Think about people who don't have the ability to move around or get out of their house. Where are you going to go? Because if you go outside and you don't have a tree, you're in the sun, and it's going to be just as hot and just as uncomfortable. I was just shocked that it's still so big. And I guess if I look at areas where we could do something with what you were just talking about, maybe this is something that we, in any new construction or remodeling, we require it. I mean, it's a safety issue, right?
And maybe it is. When you think about the renovations that have to happen to become ADA compliant,
right,
as things get renovated and stuff, like, I don't know. Is that part of it? Is air conditioning a requirement as you do updates to old buildings?
That'd be
a good question.
Maybe.
If anyone knows that, is it a nice to have or a need to have?
I've never heard anyone propose that. But I think if you're you talk about, and I know the argument for sprinklers are very, very expensive. And I know a lot of cities like mine are actually being very consistent about it. If you're doing this, remodel or new, you have to have them. I would assume that that's the case, but I don't know, because again, I was shocked by the fact that it was 10% of households in Milwaukee County don't have air conditioning.
The last time I lived in a place that didn't have air conditioning was when I lived in Brooklyn. And I mean, the summers in New York get pretty hot, and it was an old building. I think we had an air conditioning unit, like a window unit.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really cutting it. And I just remember laying on the floor. It was like July, eating popsicle after popsicle. I'm just being like, this is
internally
so
cool.
This is so hot.
Where's the ice?
Just sitting there sweating.
And it's not as simple, like you're asking about going down the basement. Yeah, in our house, basement's very cool. Always, it's well insulated. But at some point, if you don't have a basement, then where are you going to go? And again, everybody's not as mobile as maybe you and I are. Elderly people are often trapped in their homes for the most part until they have assistance. It's something we got to start thinking about. I just thought it was very relevant and a great story and great reporting by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Madeline Heim. Do you know Madeline?
I do.
Yeah. Great story.
It's wonderful.
Obviously very relevant to what's going on.
I did say that as far as the different things to remember that they don't always write their own
yes. headlines. I think. Yeah. Did I say that at the beginning when we were talking about the other story from the Journal Sentinel?
I don't know if you did or not, but I get the inference. But, yeah. And this was the headline to see which parts of Milwaukee County have the most homes without AC. And it just surprised me. Something to think about on a very hot day. It looks like we'll have a few more days of that and then maybe some little atmospheric unrest with some storms. I just hope that at 12 o'clock in Cudahy, I'll be in Cudahy for the parade on Saturday, that there's no rain for the 4th of July parade.
Fingers crossed.
Are you going to a parade?
Riverwoods Parade.
Yeah, when is that?
I think it starts around 11.
On Saturday. I love that they stagger.
There's at the St. Casimir Church, you can go and someone from the community brings a bunch of things to decorate for kids to decorate their bike. And
that's
then
cool.
So there's like a group.
So does Frankie do a bike?
Like Frankie will do a bike. Oh, we did her stroller last year. Now she actually has a bike that she can do. Or a tricycle, let's be honest. and so you go down and as a community you can and decorate your bikes together, and then we walk up. It's not like a parade. It's more of like all the kids on their bikes or wagons and stuff like that. And then we go around the corner and then it ends up being at Gordon Park, like a little festival with food and it has a water pad. So the water pad will be on as far as kids running through. And yeah, it's fun.
That's a celebration of summer.
Yeah, it's a good community event.
All right, we'll take a quick break here on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. As we're winding down the show, we're watching our monitors in studio, and on the top of the Empire State Building are two individuals dressed in black. It appears to be a man and a woman, looks like. They unfurled a banner that says, it's not up now, but it said, "When the power of love beats the love of power, the world knows peace."
I do not have a fear of heights.
That's crazy.
Watching
though. This
footage right now of what clearly is a helicopter having
She's
a camera
on the
on
edge
them,
of that platform.
Like, it is kind, because have you been to the top of the, like, at least
no.
not that top,
no.
not the spire top, but have you never been to, like, the actual viewing
no.
deck of the Empire
no.
State Building? It is
high.
Very tall. Yeah. And so the thing about climbing up from where, like, the viewing deck is, up the spire to where they are, like, I'm getting a little, like, sick to my stomach actually even watching it and thinking about how high they are. And they're not, there's zero harness. Like, there is nothing. Like, they are just up there.
They're sitting on the edge of the platform.
They're clearly getting the attention that they're seeking out, but I don't know for what end or what goal.
What's the end game?
But, wow.
They clearly don't have any fear. They were embracing before. They're walking around like they're taking selfies. Again, what's the end game here? Are you jumping off with a parachute?
They're kind of dressed like cat burglars, like all in
yeah.
black and tight clothes. I guess we'll find out the story. Will they be arrested? Like, once
oh, yeah.
they come down? Like,
I'm reading the police thing. NYPD's on scene. They don't risk their own lives to get them off. So it's going to be interesting. They're going to get as close as they can with being safe. But at some point, they're going to either have to, jump off. Or climb down, and that's where they'll meet the force of the NYPD.
So what is the charge then? Trespassing?
Oh, there's probably, yeah, tampering with, that's a communications tower on the Empire State Building. So there's all kinds of things they can charge them with, public disobedience, specific things. But I tell you what, for two people on top of a very tall place, they're very confident in their walking. Oh, they're climbing down now, looks like. Are they going down? Yeah, they're going inside.
We made our point.
Oh, they listened, apparently.
Wow.
Anyway, World Cup.
World Cup
is also capturing the world's attention.
Are you watching tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to watch.
You are going to watch. All right,
yeah.
Team USA versus Bosnia mm-hmm. tonight in the
the
knockout
round. 7
p.m.
Central.
I am very excited. My husband and I are going to go to Nomad, which is a soccer bar on off of Brady Street.
They do it right.
They have outdoor projectors. And because I haven't gotten to watch at least any of the U.S. games in like a group setting yet. Like, we've been a pretty busy 2 weeks. And so I was like, I want at least one game where we're in a big group and getting that kind of feeling watching the game. Hopefully, fingers crossed, U.S. goes on beyond tonight, and this won't be my only opportunity to do that. But I was like, if it is, because soccer is weird, we're getting a babysitter and we're going to experience it that way versus just watching it at home.
Well, this is, like you said in the outline, it's the first time, if they win, the first time they'll knock the team out in 24 years.
I know.
That's pretty cool. And they get to the round of 16.
The men's team, not been our shining star
no,
compared to the women's team when
women's
it comes
team,
to soccer.
Yeah, the champions, two times?
No, more than two times.
Yeah, I mean, just brilliant, brilliant soccer
but
players.
But the good news is, so Paraguay won in an unbelievable match on Monday. But we beat Paraguay 4-1.
Yeah.
And so, as the people who I refer to that are much bigger soccer experts than I am. This is one of the best teams we've had in a long time, so that's yes. very exciting. I guess my question to the audience is, do you plan to watch? Are you going to watch in a group setting versus just watch at home? Has your interest in soccer increased since this all began, from like where you were at the beginning of June before everything kicked off versus where you are now? I also just have to say, so Mexico played last night. They beat Ecuador. Have you seen some of the footage of Guadalajara?
It's unbelievable.
The footage, if you have not seen this yet, Google Guadalajara celebration last night. This was just to move out of the round.
Yeah.
This wasn't even them winning the whole thing. It was unreal. The fireworks, the amount of people who were there. It was unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that as far as how many people gathered to watch the game together, considering it wasn't even a world championship game.
Maybe it took us hosting this World Cup in the way that we're doing all around the country to finally focus our attention, one, on a better U.S. men's team, but two, understanding finally, hopefully, that soccer, or football as it's called, is the most popular sport in the world. I mean, right now, Congo is beating England. I imagine my English friends are not real happy about that, and it's there's still a lot of time to play, but it is, the upset things, it's just nuts.
But it's, I mean, that's the thing that's crazy. I mean, to a certain extent, every sport is like that, where you play the game, and even who's favored to win doesn't always win. There's upsets. But there is something specific about the randomness of soccer that, like, because it's so low scoring, that this can absolutely happen, where they got a good goal, and that's the game.
And women won four times.
Four times. There you go. I knew impressive. It was more than twice.
That is impressive. So good luck. Our team tonight against Bosnia-Herzegovina, I think is the full name. And I think they are favored. So, but you know, this World Cup, you never know. England now losing 1-0 to the Congo. All right, quick break, final break of the Point Taken Show right now. Quick update on the breaking news. The folks who are on top of the two people on top of the Empire State Building put a banner out. They took the banner with them. They're now making their way down that tower, the communications tower on top of the Empire State Building in New York City. And I guess if they get down one more level, they'll probably be arrested immediately by the New York Police Department.
But then, I mean, how many, like, they'll probably get interviewed, right?
Oh, yeah.
Will they be allowed to get interviewed after they get arrested?
Yeah, not right away, but at some point, yeah.
Because here's one of those things. This kind of feels like, you know how, as we talk about the World Cup, when inevitably there's a streaker who gets onto the pitch. And the cameras just don't show it because they don't want to encourage more people to do it. So right now you have people who are doing something wildly dangerous that they're going to get arrested for. There's a lot of coverage on it. Is that a bad move because you don't want to encourage copycats? Does the media just like try to crush this story versus obviously people are going to be like, why did you do this?
Well, CNN's apparently flying a drone or a helicopter around the top of that tower.
It's kind of making me motion sick.
Yeah, I actually had the same thought. It's like, stop. So, yeah, I mean, you don't want people risking their lives. Obviously, it looks like there may be some... There's a couple guys with helmets. I'm guessing they're not going to be friendly to them. They're going to get them arrested here pretty soon. Yeah, I think this says NYPD on their jackets or something like that. Yeah, don't do this. And the banner was like, you know, the power of love is...
It's a good message.
Yeah, better than the love of power, I'm paraphrasing. But yeah, don't do that. Don't risk your life. If you can have the message, certainly, and not a bad message, but and probably true in some cases. But the good news is they're off the dangerous part of the tower. And now it's World Cup time. We're all going to get wound up tonight at 7 p.m. Hope the United States beats Bosnia. And then round of 16, and the hysteria will just ramp up, because then you get a couple days before your next game. And I heard the possible opponents. Everybody seems beatable this year because Germany lost, England's losing.
Well,
nope, they're not losing. They had one goal. Oh, that's a replay. All of a sudden, 0-0.
There's one goal. That was like 6 minutes, so that's early.
Yeah. So that's an early in the game. Yeah. So we'll see what happens in that game. But all things possible. Love to see the U.S. men's team win it or go far at least. And you know, we'll see what happens. France is always a strong team. Someone who's spent the day after a World Cup win in that country. We'll do it again tomorrow. Final show of the week. Chris, she's Chris, and I'm Steve. Point Taken. News is next.